Clark Peters.
Hi, Gabby.
Can we start with musicals?
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Music is in your soul, isn't it? I mean, that's...
Pretty
Joan
much so.
Joan Armour Trading, isn't that where you first started out?
Oh, my God.
Love and Affection, one of my favourite all-time songs of all time.
I knew Joan before, when Joan and Pam had a little duo folk group together. We were all signed to Cube Records on Poland Street. Essex Music was the house, it was Essex House. And we were all there. I had a little group. I was asked to come on in to demo a song. I was living in Paris. I went back to Paris, and I got. And when I arrived, they said, the demo was so good, they want you to form a group. And I came back over, and, you know, Joan and I were in this, in and out the building around the same time. You know, quite a few of us there. And it was just great when she said, would you come and sing on this? And there was Leroy and... Leroy Wiggins, who was also in that group, and Tyrone Scott, who was the lead singer. And the next thing I knew was, oh, give me love.
Oh!
You know?
Seriously, whenever anybody says, you know, what's in your top five, that song is in my top five all-time favourite songs.
That's beautiful.
I love it. It's so beautiful. And I think, weirdly, I think it should be re-released today because I played it to my daughters about a month ago. And they just sat there and went, oh, that is incredible.
Yeah. She, her melodies, her lyrics, her sensibility with music, her the way she communicates, I haven't seen her in so long, I feel guilty. And if you're listening to this, I'm coming to you, all right?
Oh,
I'm
that
coming
would be lovely.
To see you, Joan.
That would be lovely. But you also then, from being in the band, you then went on and wrote musical. I mean... Musicals.
Well, I wrote two musicals.
Two.
I wrote one with some, well, both of them I've written with friends. It's a collaborative endeavor, that's for sure. But when the group broke up, I went right back into theater.
Mm.
And it was Guys and Dolls at Watford Rep, 1976.
So who were you in Guys and Dolls?
I was Sky Masterson.
Oh, you were?
And it was Dougie Squires. Remember Dougie
Squires?
Yeah,
he was a choreographer.
That's right.
On TV.
Yeah, Dougie was wild. And I was hired to play a character named Liver Lips Louie. And so I was just happy to be in a theater. And Dougie and I, we tell the story differently. You know, he says he always wanted me to play Sky. Well, if he had told me that, I would have been ready for it. You know, but around the third week of rehearsal, there was no Sky, and I stood in a couple of times and would read for it. And obviously, when luck came around, anyone who's my age knows this song, you know, from the States. And so I sang that, and I was Sky right up until opening night.
Wow.
With Elizabeth Manchester. I love it. Oh.
So, like I said, musicals are music is in you. And then Five Guys Named Mo. I mean, I remember going to see it and just I loved it. I was very little and I loved it. And I mean, I love musical theatre, but it. And then of course you were Billy Flynn, and we were talking about that before just before we started recording. That's such a character. And I love that you did a little bit of Billy Flynn from Chicago.
Yes.
Just that little bit you did. Because you said you could just play with it.
Yeah, you could. It's supposed to be Billy manipulating Roxy. And she's set up like a mannequin on his lap. You know, he's got his hand in the back of the puppet and he's doing this. And from having children, I've discovered these voices in me. You know. And so we go... It's supposed to go, where you come from, Mississippi. And you know, so I said, no, to hell with that. Where you come from,
Mississippi. Very wealthy.
Where is that voice from?
I know. This is what I'm saying.
When you have kids and you got to entertain them, then you find all of these characters inside of you. And so... I used it in Chicago.
It's interesting when you said the smile on your face when you do that, and you talk about your kids, and the smile on your face when you talked about being back in theatre. Does that still put that smile on your face when you talk about theatre? Because I suppose we all know you for films and TV.
Yeah, yeah.
Now.
I think
more.
I think it does. I'm about to do Lear. I'm about to do The Fool in Lear, to Danny Sapani playing Lear. And it's, there's so much scope to play around with, to play the fool. You know, and at first I thought, this is good. This is going to be a lot of fun. And we were at this event where Ian McClellan was there, and we started talking about this. And he pointed out how important this role is to the piece, and that he's not like a jester, you know. And that put the smile back on my face, because it's the breadth of emotions that this man has got to go through, you know, and the truths that he speaks to power, you know, and then this truth that he lays before the audience before he walks away is exactly what I want to say.
How wonderful. And so
it'll always bring a smile to my face. There's no doubt about it. Scares the hell out of me.
Oh, really? Still?
Yeah. And particularly Shakespeare. The thithers.
There comes that voice again. That's the same voice.
I know. I don't know where he come from. And I was just over in Ireland with my friend, you know, with Chris O'Dowd. You know Chris O'Dowd?
Yes. Oh, he's wonderful, Chris.
I tell you, I was sitting there with him and we were just having the most wonderful time.
Do you know, I'm looking at you and all these words, it's the same boat. People who are just listening to this, I promise this is still Clark Peters. But let's go to TV and film. I think I want to start with Billboards. Just that film... I've suddenly gone, Ebbing, Missouri.
It's a long story. It's a long title.
Yes.
I have a friend.
Oh, my goodness.
It's called Three Billboards. Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. What an extraordinary film.
Yeah. And Frances McDormand is just fantastic in it. You know, that's what theater should be doing, you know, addressing certain issues in an oblique kind of way so that you get the message, you know. And it was wonderful to play. It was wonderful to play with her and all of those actors who were leave me a little bit starstruck, because I've spent more time over here than there. But those are the faces that I see on television and films when they come out, you know.
They feel like that about you.
Well,
they do.
That's nice. That's nice. But yeah, it was fun.
It was an extraordinarily powerful film, though, and it won so many awards, and I'm so pleased it did, because it made people carry on talking about it, because the whole story behind it, everything about it was incredibly powerful, and it made you think. It was one of those films that you leave the cinema and you carry on thinking about it.
Yes.
You carry on talking
about it. And it's also a good whodunit. You just don't know what's going to happen when those two people who you never put together in the same sentence, let alone in the same car, going in the same direction, you know, at the end. You have no idea what's happening. And the way that it was edited left the audience wanting to find out what happened. Did they go after him? Did they find him? You know, if you've not seen Ebbing, Three Billboards, you should, because it's a really good mystery. It is very good. And those issues of the feminist movement, you know, and this is before Me Too and all of that kind of stuff. When those issues are in a person's hands, like Frances, very capable, you cannot help but to sit back and reflect on what you've just seen. You know, it hits you subliminally. Yeah.
But you've done a lot. You've done a lot of things that leave people... I suppose The Wire, which it'd be crazy if we don't talk about The Wire, of course, but The Wire... it was that program that everybody talked about. It. Were you aware at the time or afterwards that on every corner? I mean, it was extraordinary. Everywhere I went, everyone was talking about
The Wire. I really didn't know. No, I don't think any of us knew. I don't think anybody in that cast knew how powerful these statements were going to be, not just in Baltimore, but first of all, across America. But even before it got across America, Europe got it first. You know, people in Europe were saying, well, this is, in France, it was called the tap, le tap. And so there were people there who were called, who I knew, who were saying, this is a wonderful piece of television. And I didn't know what they were talking about.
Really?
It was The Wire. It was The Wire. And Spain, I found people from Spain were saying, this is exactly like Madrid. Glasgow ran into two guys. Well, they ran into me. Saying it
in a nice way, I hope.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it's so nice. They stopped the car. They were in a taxi. And it was during the Edinburgh Festival. They stopped the taxi as I was coming out of my hotel, and jumped out. And I thought they were coming. They were so excited. It felt like aggression.
Right.
And they were going, "It's Freeman. It's fucking Freeman. It's Freeman." You know, and I'm saying, "Freeman." Oh, Freeman. And they were telling me they had just seen it and that they had just been discussing it and how much Baltimore and Glasgow were like with the drug problems, with the education problems, the local government, all of that, you know. So, yeah, it was wonderful. We had no idea what it was going to be when we were doing that. And I think that that's what I'm most grateful for, that awareness of being placed in something like that.
So isn't that interesting? So you, when you read it or when you were called to come in and do it, do you ever get that feeling somewhere inside when you think, yeah, this is good? I mean, or do you just go for it? I mean,
I knew.
So you knew that, you felt that about The Wire?
I felt it about the stories in that first season. You know, David had to fight for every season after that.
What? Yeah.
Yes, every season after that, it was always touch and go.
Sorry, but this is the show that the world is talking about.
Yes, yes.
And it was still like that.
It was still
Why?
Like that. He had to fight for it. Because I think it's because both he and Ed Burns, coming from that background and really understanding the law and understanding the underworld that surrounds what's supposed to be justice, when people are that smart, you know, they need to be contained. You know what I mean? Mm. Sometimes they're just too smart for the establishment, so to speak. And I think that that David really wanted to get a truth out there that the broadcasters had to think about and think, well, we're not too sure we want to let all of that out right now. You know, or we can't educate too much of the public in a way, because we need to have our public dumb. We need to have our people simple. You know, nobody wants, no government, I promise you, no government in the world wants to have a populace that is well-educated. Because if they're well-educated, they are probably fine critical thinkers and might decide, well, we're not going to go to work today because of X, Y, and Z. You know, they might, they'll be more difficult to control. And so I think that with The Wire, when you're seeing the corruption of police, right, that diminishes their power to the public in a way, because now they can be challenged because you've seen the wrong that they've done, you know, with local government. You know, in America, you know, just recently, you know, 2 years ago, however many years ago, you know, they stole the election. Come on. Did they steal the election? And yet there are people who will believe that that process was like that and that it was easily taken care of. Now, if you were a forward-thinking person, you might be more critically analytical about how things unfolded during that. I can't take any particular side on that because you're looking at me in a way like...
No, I'm not. I'm listening. I'm listening to what you have to say.
Yeah.
Because this is fascinating that you're saying that we're talking about the TV shows... Mm. That's why he had to push for it, because it was going to question.
Yes, yes.
It was going to question people. Yes, were going to question the establishment.
They would, of course they would. Of course they would. You know, there was a moment where we found out, I think it was by season 5, the wiretaps that were up in Baltimore became less active when The Wire was on. So you can imagine that if you're working on a couple of cases and you've got wiretaps on, I don't know, Al Capone and whomever, and you're really listening, and then all of a sudden it goes quiet and you're thinking, why is this, right? And so you're listening and nothing, and then after a while the conversation starts again. Well, they noticed that those conversations with the people that they had been tapping had gone down when The Wire was being broadcast. So the criminals as well were really listening to The Wire. And this is what I'm saying.
That's incredible.
Yes, and well, that's a fact as well.
I'm not going to go back and watch it again and look at it differently. It's made me really think about it completely differently.
I didn't look at it until 10 years afterwards, when I was recovering from some surgery. And two things hit me. One was gratitude to have been part of this statement, but also that it's a story that works on so many levels. There's a documentary that's going on. There's a whodunit that's going on. There's a love interest that's going on. You don't know where McNulty's going to wind up, or, you know, all of that. So it's so full. It's so rich. That when I saw it, I thought, yeah, man, this is a... I wonder if anyone else is going to come up with anything else like that. And we really need something like that.
It's so interesting because the things that you've done, you know, when I was doing my research and reading about you and everything, I thought you've done some monumental things. I mean, because I'm just picking a few. I'm cherry picking a few. But I mean, recently as well, it's only a couple of years ago, to Five Bloods, you know, that everyone was talking about as well. And people are still talking about. And it's... I feel like you've picked and chosen, that's not very good English, picked and choosed, you've picked and chosen really well, but it's like you absolutely know what you're doing. I think some actors may just say, yeah, I'll do it, yeah, I'll do it, yeah, why not? The work is coming in. But I feel like you've carefully walked this path because you want to say something.
I think that all creative people, if they're conscious, want to use the gift that they've been given to serve. You know, if you want to be a star, go to Hollywood. You know, if I came to England because England had a culture of theater, you know, and that appealed to me in my teens. You know, so when the opportunity came to be here, of course I took it because it was theater. I wasn't chasing anything else besides...
You weren't chasing fame.
Oh, to hell with that. That stuff is fleeting. No, I picked this job because it's the only job that I can be in from the time I'm 18 to the time I'm 108. You know?
Yeah.
If you keep your instrument together, you can be working throughout your life, if that's what you want to do. You know, I don't think there's another occupation in the world that can do that.
You were very young when you started, though, weren't you?
Yeah.
I mean, and you started doing costume behind the scenes in hair. But what makes me laugh is there was times there wasn't much costume in hair, and you did costume in hair. If nobody's seen hair, there's it's pretty naked on stage. Yes. But you did costume in hair. Was that just a way into theatre?
It kind of was.
Dressing naked people.
Or undressing.
Undressing them.
No, I went to Paris to visit my brother who was in the show. And I got a job backstage in wardrobe, you know. And it sounds more glamorous than it really was. You know, you're picking up somebody's old, sweaty dance belt and dance bras and all of this kind of stuff, you know. And you might be sewing on a button that fell off of something that somebody was wearing, but that was, you know, that was it. It wasn't like it was a costume.
But it was the smell of backstage theater, wasn't it?
It was theater. Yeah. I was just happy to be in a theater with a company of actors who were like-minded. I mean, hair came about at a time when those issues were really pressing on an adolescent mind in America, you know, and I knew that I had been auditioning for it in America, and my brother was auditioning in Paris. I had no idea that he was doing that.
The same thing.
The same thing. God bless him. The same thing.
Wow.
You know, and he wound up getting here. I auditioned for hair so often that the production company would go, here comes Clark Waters.
Yeah, come on, son. Yeah, yes, give us another song, you know. You know,
it was just...
What was your audition song? Did you have to do a song from the show?
I am ashamed to say that, you know, I come from a jazzy kind of background, you know.
You're blushing.
My song, and if Chapman Roberts is around and he hears this, you know, the song I sang was a song, it was The Look of Love.
Just give us a little bit, go on, a little burst of it.
The look of love is in your eyes, a look that time can't disguise.
Got the job, as far as I'm concerned. Why didn't they give you the job on
because
straight
that's,
away?
Because that's not the kind of music that they needed. They needed a voice that was going to really...
Do you still sing now?
Yeah, I had a wonderful time about 2 weeks ago at the London Jazz Festival.
Oh,
right? We were at Festival Hall.
Yeah.
And the wonderful Guy Barker and I had met 15 years before, which was the first year that this jazz festival was on, and I was a part of it then, and we were doing a celebration of a man's music named Billy Strayhorn. And he had written an arrangement, and I heard this, and I thought, man, I'd really love to sing that, something like that one time. Here we are 15 years later. He says, Clark, would you be a part of this? I said, of course I will. He says, here's the chart. I said, I can sing that song. And it was just, Madeline Bell was on that one, I think, as well. Maddie Bell. Oh, my.
You've got such a beautiful voice. Just keep singing. Keep singing. Keep singing. So let's talk about your new show as well. What a beautiful premise and an amazing cast. Lovely Lindsay Duncan as well, but True God. Love.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Tell me more. Tell me more.
What does he have a Clark?
Where'd that voice come from?
Yeah.
That one was not Clark, all right? You see, it's not just me. All of us crazy actors in this building, in this business. Tell you about True Love.
Yes, please. There's a question, isn't it?
Yeah.
If people don't know you're doing a show and they just tune in at that moment and I'm saying, tell me about True Love, they'll be like, oh.
Right. Well, hopefully we'll keep you all the way through it. I guess the best way to introduce this is for a listener to remember their earliest memory and their earliest friends. Your friends, the people that you were around from the early teens to the time you left home, and your closest friends. And you reach an age where they're popping their clogs, you know. And you may not have seen them all those years, but there's a part of them that is in you, you know. Mm. And so there's this attachment. And you have history. And although 50 years has gone by, you still have this history because you cannot deny this, you know. This is kind of what true love is about. And it's about these old friends that come together and make a certain promise to look after each other. And I shouldn't give up too much information.
Yes,
about
no
that,
spoilers.
You know?
But what a beautiful thing for a drama to do. I feel like a lot of drama steps away from those sort of issues.
Yes, yeah. Well, and also that we're all like in our 70s, you know. So, you know, it's
loudly and proudly in the 70s. Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. You know, we are here. You know, we have something to offer. You know, we know that this technology might confound us, you know, but before this technology was here, there was a world that we negotiated very well, you know, and that we can still We still have something to offer. And not only is it just that those issues that we hit on, there's a suspense story that's going on in this. There's a thriller that's going on in True Love as well that is slowly unfolding that hopefully the audience will lock into and go, ooh, I didn't think they were going to do that. Oh, my God.
There's another voice from him. So this is on Channel 4. But I love that there's this drama that's celebrating age but also talking about these issues. And again, isn't it funny that I said it's like you very carefully have chosen issue-led pieces, because you've been in your youth as well. You were very outspoken about how you felt about things, and throughout your life.
It's the only life we have.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's the only life we have, and if you can either be swept along with it, or you can participate in it. You know, I prefer to participate. Mm. You know, I'm not a lone player. I'm a team player. Which is why I like theater. You know, it takes everybody, from the person backstage sewing on that little button,
yeah.
Right, to the person's outside who's making sure that that light is on in the right place, from the person backstage who's calling that cue to make the whole thing happen just for you to be out there to tell the story to that audience.
Well said.
It takes everybody to do that, you know. And if life, as according to Shakespeare, is a stage and we are but players on it, don't you think you should be participating?
Playing.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you said at the beginning as well, when you were writing music, it was a team. It was collaborative.
Yes.
So that's how you've always been.
Yes. Yes. I grew up in a family of boys. So I was never solo. You know, I always have people, you know, it's not like I don't like my own company. Believe me, I can be by myself quite happily, you know.
Please tell me that when you're by yourself, you sing.
Sometimes I do, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Recently, I've been looking at noises in the body that vibrate in your body.
Noises that vibrate in your body.
You know, as a singer, you have a head voice.
Yeah.
Throat voice, chest voice, right? You have three places where the voices vibrate in your body, yes? So in trying to move those vibrations around the body, being spurred on by a book called Resonance, which is resonant healing, you know, and how sound waves can actually help heal certain ailments and illnesses in the body, even destroy tumors, you know, without being invasive. You know, so I've been playing around with that, you know, sitting in the tub going, going up and down, trying to find where a sound vibrates in the body. And can you move that someplace else? Can you move that to your toe? Can you move that to your stomach? Can you move that to your head? Can you move that to the back of your head, you know? And what happens when the sound goes? So when I'm by myself, you know, sometimes we have a place that's in the country. I can be out there by myself and just make noise.
How lovely, yeah. Though.
Yeah.
You do have an exceptionally beautiful voice, and that you know how to use it. And did you get taught? And I don't mean taught to sing, taught to, I don't mean that, but did you, who taught you? Did you just grow up knowing how to use your voice?
I don't know. My mother was a stickler for enunciation, so there was that. There was a wonderful man named Ian Adams, who was a vocal teacher here in London, who I went to back in the 70s, who tuned my ear and my awareness to where to place the voice. And I think what they recognize that there's a gift, and if you have a gift, you better nurture it. You know, it's just not going to carry on and grow by itself. You need to look after that. You know, you need to take care of that. And I used to smoke cigarettes. You know, and then I thought, you know, this isn't good for this voice. This isn't good for the wind and all that. And then you think about wonderful voices, wonderful smoky voices like Nat King Cole, right? And then you think, well, he had that wonderful voice, but those cigarettes that made that wonderful voice is also what killed him.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you want to be in this, Clark? You know, so that's why now I'm trying to find those organic ways to get to those sounds.
You don't smoke anymore?
Oh, no.
Good.
Oh, hell no. You know, 10 years even now, I think. I had stopped for about 5 years, and then I was doing this tribute to Nat King Cole, and I started smoking again. I think, like, you stupid twat, you know? you know.
Say it as it is, Clark. Can I ask, it's a rather strange question, but does anybody still call you Peter? Because you're Peter Clark. And am I right, one of your sons is Peter Clark?
Yeah. He's PJ. He's Peter Jr.
Right. But are you Clark? Wake up in the morning, you're Clark.
Always.
You think of yourself as Clark.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, people think it's a hard thing to do, but you know, as a child or as a teenager, we would call each other by our last names. Yo, what's up, Johnson? Yeah, I'm cool. Do you see Smitty today? Smitty being Smith.
Mm.
You know, and so it wasn't when I joined the union here. There were
the actor for the actor equity.
Yes, there was already Peter Clark. So I said, well, how about Peter Jeffrey Clark? No. How about PG Clark? No. And she's like looking at watch. Well, you know, I've got to go to work. Well, do you mind? You know, all right, there it is. Clark Peter. She said Peter. Let's put an S on it. Peters, because your name is backwards on the form. I figured someone's going to remember. They'll know it's me once they see that, you know. And also, it was a nod to one of my favorite actors, Brock Peters. Yeah, so that's why it stayed, and that's why it stuck, and that's who I am.
And please carry on always being exactly like that. And you've got so much to still do. And when you do your one man show, which is talking and singing. Ooh. Will you do that, please? On stage. I'm in the front.
You know.
With all those voices.
Did you see what she just did? Did you see what she just did? She said, when you do, I'm not planning on
You've
doing a one-man
show. You've got to do
show,
your today. One-man show. You've got to. You have no idea. Everyone would be there in the audience coming. That, and listen, the whole team behind, Ed and Joe have just put their hands up. They're coming along. You see? You'll be singing. You'll be doing all those voices.
That's very kind.
You are lovely. Listen. Thank you. And good luck with True Love. Good luck with everything. And please keep singing.
I'll try to keep singing as long as you're listening. I don't know where that
happened. Well, no, that was good. I like it.